Hello, my spooky friends.
My name is Cassie.
And I'm Caitlin.
And welcome in to I'd Survive. Hooray, I have movies to talk about, do you?
Yeah, I do actually. I do.
I'm so excited. You go first.
Okay, Cassie, actually, I neglected to tell you before because I thought we should talk about this now. So it's Monday morning. I want everyone to know that it's Monday morning. We start recording this podcast at 10:30 a.m. Eastern time. Mm-hmm. I've already filmed my reaction this morning, and what a way it was to start off my week. I watched The Human Centipede this morning.
Oh, you beat me. You win. You win this week. What I will say is I've seen that movie once, way too young.
Oh, God.
I think early high school when I saw that movie, and I never saw it again for reasons that you probably understand now.
I absolutely said I did not enjoy this experience and will not be watching this again, except I do need to watch it again because I need to edit the video.
That's going to be a heck of an edit too, isn't it? It's very graphic in that way, or from what I remember.
I mean,
like blur-wise.
The interesting thing is, like, is that considered something that needs to be blurred? Because they're covered in bandages.
It's covered.
But the positioning is, it's just, I don't know. I am going to be doing a lot of blurring. I don't think it's going to be a long video because I just sat there most of the time. It was just like, I feel sick. Thank you, everybody. This is
Did fun. It have a plot? I don't even remember. I just remember the concept and the visuals, but I don't remember like what really is going on there.
Yeah, there is a plot. The plot is very minimal to just it being a shock value film. Because it's like, it's got a plot, but then it kind of just turns into this is disgusting and horrible. Mm-hmm. And how are they going to escape if even they can? So
maybe this is where my hatred for exploitation horror began.
Valid.
Yeah.
I would say that the villain in this movie is actually genuinely the scariest villain I've seen in a horror movie. And I've seen Silence of the Lambs, and I think he's scarier than Hannibal Lecter.
Okay, so I watched two really good horror movies.
Okay.
That were both reactions for me recently. The first, Tucker and Dale versus Evil.
Right. That's a biggie.
It's horror comedy, heavy on the comedy.
Mm-hmm.
However, I loved it. Usually there's a ladybug. One moment.
Oh.
No, Tucker and Dale, it's heavy comedy, but it has like the heart that I've talked to you about before when it comes to comedy, which is my favorite thing that like ties the whole movie together. I would be very curious to see you watch that movie and your opinions on it as you get into horror comedy, because I don't know if you've ever seen a horror comedy with a vibe like this. I don't. Okay. So it's just really good. The concept is really, really good. And they just run with it the whole time. Like the concept itself just leads to so many good, easy, flowing jokes.
Okay.
So anyways, Tucker and Dale, that was great. And then I also watched The Fly.
Oh, okay. I don't know what this is.
It is. Well, I didn't realize until I watched it that it came out in the 80s, but it was a remake of a creature feature 50s horror. And it has Jeff Goldblum. Is that his name?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's like the main guy. And then, oh my gosh, Gina Davis is also in it. And you would know her from, she's like the mom in Stuart Little. And she's like also the mom in Beetlejuice. It's like a sci-fi horror where like this scientist is creating this teleportation device, like teleporting things from one pod to another. And he's like, I'm changing the world, you know?
Yeah.
And it is crazy. It's like, wow, good job. But then he decides to try to teleport himself. It's like it's a little bit more different when it comes to like living things.
For sure.
And a fly gets in the pod with him.
Okay.
And he doesn't realize it. And like the fly and his genetic makeup like fuse together when he comes out the other side. And What I expected from this movie was for him to literally come out the other end an actual fly, and I was ready for like the B movie part two.
Yeah,
because there's a bit of a romance in this movie as well. I was like, oh my god, she's gonna like fall in love with this fly. But it's definitely that's not the direction it goes. Okay. It goes in very different directions, and it was very fun and very very good special like practical effects.
I don't know if I could do that, because I remember I read one of what's his name? Is it Joe Hill or whatever? Stephen King's son a short story that was like about a person turning into a bug, and it was like the most disgusting thing that I've ever read in my life.
You know, like, what?
I think I'd struggle.
You would, but you've made it through Human Centipede.
Well, this is true. I've now seen that, which I don't understand what's wrong with the people who made that film, but good for them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The fly is just easy work to you now.
I thought things were easy. I don't know. I thought I'd seen it all.
No, there was a specific thing that kept happening in The Fly, I will say, that you would not appreciate, because I did not appreciate it, and you would also want to die when you see it. So...
I'm telling you, my horror gag reflex lately has been very sensitive.
And it would be triggered.
I don't know if I could do it.
Well, today we're going to be talking about a movie called P2 from 2007. We're getting into the Christmas spirit starting now.
Woo!
So P2 is a psychological horror that was released in theaters on November 9th, 2007. It was Frank Calfone's directorial debut, and apparently, girl, I was so confused when I read this on the wiki page, and I had to like trace it back and do my own research, because I was like, is this real? But apparently it's the first feature film to be released by Summit Entertainment. And I was like, what do you mean Summit Entertainment's been around for so, so long? Like, what are you talking about? And I went through like Summit Entertainment's wiki page and at their whole like backlog of movies. And yeah, it goes back to the 80s. So I'm like, what are you talking about?
Right.
But they were all like in junction with other house, like other distributors and other production companies. And this is like the first solo venture that they did.
Okay.
It was a box office failure in the in the US, but with its $3.5 million budget, it went on to make $7.7 million internationally. So
Not too bad. Yeah.
And I have no idea if this means anything to you, but I figured I was obligated to tell you that the main girl is played by Rachel Nichols.
And wait, I do know that name. Why do I know that
before I even tell you who it is?
I know her name from... Not from Criminal Minds.
Girl, she had a 3-episode appearance in season 6 of Criminal Minds as Ashley Seaver.
Yes, Seaver. Yeah. Wait, yeah. She's only in 3 episodes?
According to, you know, you can't trust Wiki, but they said she had like a major role for those 3 episodes, you know, like she was a major moment in the show. Yeah,
I'll be honest. I think it's more than 3 because she like replaces a main girly. Like she's one of the, like she's in the like title card.
Whoa, really?
Yeah. Like she's like, what the heck? She's in for a hot minute.
That's weird. But, yeah. Okay. Yeah. So that's her.
I was like, I know that name. Oh my God, that's so crazy. Yeah. That is so crazy.
So yeah. Happy holidays, everybody. And let's get into P2. Okay. Oh, I do have to give a quick disclaimer. Well, I should probably give more than one, but I'm not going to. I'm just going to give one.
This is always a concern. Anytime there's a disclaimer.
No, all I want to say is that I'm doing this a little bit differently in the fact that we only are going to have 2 survivability check-ins for one. We're going to do a halfway point and then an end, and then we can weigh it, you know, like we usually do, and
perfect,
change what we need at the end. But the way that this movie sets itself up, I'm just like, it just makes sense to have 2 instead of 3 for this one.
Gotcha. Works for me.
We open on a level of a parking garage labeled P2.
Oh, would you look at that?
And we hear, okay, well, I wrote, and we hear Santy Baby, which is not accurate. We hear Santa Baby, the song.
Oh, yeah.
By Queen Eartha Kitt, playing over these establishing shots of the parking garage. And the camera makes its way through this garage until we land on a car parked in one of the parking spots. And when we zoom in on the trunk of this car, like a skinny wooden pole comes bursting out of the keyhole.
Oh.
And a handcuffed woman gasps for breath as she pushes the trunk door open. And we cut to the title card.
Oh, okay. That was quick.
Yep.
So we're starting off in a really good position, it sounds like.
Yeah. It sounds like she's in for a really, really happy holiday.
I don't like that survivability score is already being affected.
Right.
And it's been about 2 seconds.
It has. Yeah. It's really a startling start. But we're going to chill out now. We're going to go back and we're going to chill.
Let's vibe.
We've got the New York skyline that eventually brings us into a skyscraper where we meet corporate baddie Angela, or, you know, Ashley. That was her name, right?
Yes.
Criminal Minds Ashley.
Yes, love that.
She's got an earpiece in. She's talking numbers with some important person. Who knows what those numbers mean? And she's got a secretary, Jody, who walks in and tells her Mr. Harper wants to speak with her tonight, which Angela seems slightly on edge by, but like, no big deal. She can handle it. She even tells Jody to take the rest of the night off because it's Christmas. Mm. And a little later on in the night, Angela is still working away in her office when Mr. Harper walks in. She stays cold while she stares at the work on her computer and is just like, what can I do for you, Jim? And he walks in, looking back out to see if anyone around is listening. And when he sees that they're alone, in a low voice, he goes, Angela, I feel terrible about what happened.
Uh-oh.
And Angela's like, it's okay. It's fine. Let's just not worry about it, okay? But Mr. Harper doesn't want to let it go. No, it's not okay. I acted like a real jerk. I had too many drinks, and you know how these Christmas parties can be.
Oh, dear.
You know, we had a baby last year, and it's been a hard year. I simply want to tell you that I'm really sorry. Oh. So, yeah.
Okay.
He is a new dad. And it's just been so hard, like, supporting his wife and his kid, that he just had to make the moves on his colleague at the office Christmas party. You know how it is.
Yeah, it's my child's fault. I don't know what to tell
you.
Couldn't help it.
They made me do it.
Yeah. They sure did.
She does accept his apology, and he thanks her. And with Christmas wishes, he leaves. So now that she's alone again, Angela calls her sister, Lorraine, who's been trying to get a hold of her.
Lorraine. Sorry. I'll chill.
The way that didn't cross my mind for – I mean, why would it? We've been talking. I need to rewatch Conjuring movies.
Yes.
Yeah, she calls Lorraine, who's been trying to get a hold of her, and family Christmas is happening at Lorraine's tonight. Dinner's going to be served really late, and Lorraine begs Angela not to forget the Santa Claus costume. They've got plans for her kids.
Oh, yes.
And Angela promises her sister that it's already in her car and she'll be heading straight over from the office. A little while later, Angela is wrapping some things up, walking down the hall with a stack of papers in her hand, when she runs into Carl, the security guard, who mans the front desk of the building.
Okay, hey, Carl.
Yeah. And it's a bit of a jump scare for both of them. It has to be. You know how it is.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't expecting her to be working so late on Christmas Eve. And she's like, yeah, trust me, me neither. So right now, Carl was actually locking up all the doors for the night. But he's like, it's okay. I'll wait until you're all set. And Angela's like, actually, I'm just wrapping things up. So the plan is for her to lock up her own office, take the elevator down with Carl so he doesn't have to come up to this floor to like secure it again later.
Mm.
They ride the elevator down and make some nice small talk. Carl comes off as like a really nice guy. They all make it down to the lobby and say their goodbyes before Angela heads off on her own to a separate elevator that will then take her down to the parking garage beneath the building.
Mm, yep.
So she gets a call from her sister and she gets inside and presses the button for P2. And her sister is stressed because Angela's already late at this point and hasn't even hit the road yet. She's in the city and she has to drive out to Jersey. So like,
And on Christmas Eve too?
Oh, yeah.
Yikes.
As the elevator lowers into the parking garage, the call starts breaking up until it's completely dropped and we have no service.
Can I just say, you went to say like as the elevator lowers and our stream like cut out and you were talking about it losing service. So that was kind of weird.
Okay. Well, this is normal for us at this point, if we're being honest.
Exactly.
We've accepted the fact that our podcast is cursed.
It really is.
And things like this just keep happening.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No service. That's real, right? Like parking garage, underground specifically, of course.
Not surprising.
You're not getting service down there.
Mm-hmm.
She hangs up and exits the elevator, and this parking garage is pretty desolate. We see that her car is parked at a distance. A single car comes cruising around the corner and drives past her. So like, okay, maybe we're not the only ones left right. alone for the night, but we might be now that that one car is now driving off. Like, we sure. might now be the last person.
Sure, sure.
But then when Angela gets in the driver's seat of her car and turns her key in the ignition.
No. No.
What do you think happens? Her car roars to life?
Probably not. Probably not.
Yeah. Her car won't start. She just keeps trying and trying, panicking and just beyond annoyed because she's got places mm-hmm. to be and car trouble is the worst. She doesn't know what to do.
Yeah. In this situation, I'm not scared that my car's not starting. I'm no. also just annoyed. I'm like, are you kidding me? I don't have time for this.
That's a good point. You know what this movie is doing really good at so far is like just setting up horror tropes, but making it believable and not scary.
Mm-hmm.
You know, losing service is such a horror trope, but it's like, well, yeah, that's what happens when you're in an underground parking garage and
right.
not being able to start your car. In a lot of horror movies, it's like, girl, you should know what this means. Start running. Yeah. But like, no, there's no reason to run right now. Like, exactly. it's just annoying. In the distance, she hears what sounds like a door closing and she looks around and we get a quick cut of a security feed focused on her parking spot. I know you love a security feed.
I love a security camera. So much.
And then back inside the car with Angela, she decides that she's going to have to go back inside the building, get some help. So she gets out of her car, grabs a bunch of like random Christmas bags and boxes out of her trunk and heads back to the P2 door to the elevator. But when she makes it to the door, she finds that it is locked.
Oh.
So she's not scared. She's just more and more annoyed. I think she's probably thinking that they must lock even these doors at some point every night from the outside because, like, who's entering at this time of night? It is getting late. So she heads over to this office area that is set up in the middle of the floor of P2. And it's pretty much all windows. Like, the entire office is just surrounded by windows.
Right.
And it's decked out in very pretty Christmas lights. Very cute.
Cute.
She opens the office door, calls out a hello inside, trying to find the security attendant that is on like parking garage duty.
Sure.
Which, by the way, I never knew that that was a thing. Like a parking structure having its own security. That's cool. I mean, I'm sure if the building's huge enough, the structure's big enough.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
It makes sense.
Yeah. I always think of it like offices because like they always have someone like in case when you go to leave and like the payment thing doesn't work, there's always like the press for assistance button.
Right.
And that's what I think of.
That would make sense. Yeah. She's trying to call out to the security attendant that should be in here, but instead she gets jump scared by a dog like lunging and barking at her.
Mm.
He's on a leash, chained up to a table, leashed to a table. So we're all good. He's a cutie. His name's Rocky and he's a little Rottweiler. The security guy, Thomas, hears Rocky barking and then immediately rushes over, calming him down, telling him to stop, and then apologizes to Angela. And she's like, it's okay. Look, can you unlock the door for me to the elevator? My car won't start and I need to get upstairs and get a cab. Mm-hmm. And Thomas is like, oh, yeah, I can. I just got to find my key cards. Give me a sec. He starts shuffling through this mess of an office and he finds them. Is like, all right, I was just about to do my rounds anyway, so no biggie. Let's go. And he remembers, oh, actually, if it's a battery issue with your car, I have a spare battery here that could help. And Angela's like, nah, honestly, I'm like already late enough as it is. Yeah. I better just get a cab, which like so valid. Like it's really nice that you want to help me right now. But even that, like I need the 5 minutes that it takes to get out of here.
Exactly. And that just sounds like such a headache right now. It's like, no, just get me a cab.
And it's like at that time of night, it's like I don't want to deal with like a stranger and like trying to help me. And then if he doesn't, it doesn't work. It's wasted time. And it's just like
Yeah, exactly.
Thomas is like, up to you, but it might take a while to grab a cab on Christmas Eve. So Angela's like, well, okay, sure. Let's just try to jump start the car.
Yeah, she's just kind of screwed. Honestly, girl, you might just need to go home.
Right.
Like, it's, I don't think this is meant for you tonight. I'm sorry.
So we head on over and he gets the cables connected to her battery, has her try to turn on the car again. No, headlights are still working though. So he's like,
oh,
that's weird. But he's like, yeah, sorry, I really thought this would help. And Angela's like, yeah, you've been great. I just really appreciate it if you could open the elevator door.
Mm-hmm.
And bro gets kind of defensive. He's like, I was just trying to help. And she's like, yeah, Yeah, I know. Thank you.
Right.
Anyways.
Just can I leave now? Thanks.
Yeah. So he helps grab all of her Christmas things on the way over to the elevator door and goes, I know it sucks that your car isn't starting, but it's the holidays, you know? It's time to be thankful. And she just nods.
And is like, do not talk down to me like that, I swear to God.
Right? It would take everything in me to respond the way Angela does. She goes, you're right. I should be thankful. She's just like trying to like nod and like agree and be like, whatever, just open the door. Let me get out of here.
Yeah, exactly.
They make it over to the elevator door and he pulls out his key card. But before opening it, he stops and looks at her kind of bashfully and is like, I actually prepared a small Christmas meal for myself. I don't know if, you know, you could join me if you want.
No, thank you. I'm good.
And Angela just stares back at him for a beat like, have I not made it clear that I have places to be? It is literally Christmas.
Yeah, no thank you.
But then Thomas just laughs and is like, I'm just kidding, maybe some other time though. And she's like, okay,
yeah. Bye.
And then he swipes his key card, opening the elevator door. Do you get what I mean by elevator door? It's like the door to the elevator room where the elevators are.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
Hands over her things that he was helping her carry, wishes her a Merry Christmas, and then heads back to his office. Angela gets in the elevator and makes it back up to the lobby, but she's a little confused when she doesn't see Carl manning the front desk. He just finished up his rounds, so he should be chilling at the desk for the night.
Yeah.
But okay, she sets her things down, takes a seat on a bench in the lobby before pulling out her phone and calling for a cab. We don't hear the dialogue on the other end of this call, but it sounds like it's going to be a bit of a wait. So then it's time for her to call her sister Lorraine, and she's like, oh my God, you're never going to believe what happened. My car won't start. Just start dinner without me.
Yep.
Her sister isn't happy, especially because her kids were looking forward to seeing Angela, and like the whole whatever Santa suit costume thing they were planning is out the window.
Right.
But what can you do? Angela gets comfy on this lobby, huge lobby bench, and closes her eyes. She's exhausted. Again, we pan out and the screen turns gray as we transition to a POV from the security feed where a camera is perfectly positioned on her laying on this lobby bench.
Yeah.
But okay, a little while later, we see a cab pull up to the curb outside, and inside with Angela, her phone rings, startling her awake, and it's the cab driver. And she's like, oh, yep, perfect, thank you. And she scrambles to get all of her things together before making her way to the front doors of the building, which are locked from the inside.
Oh, my God.
And she's not able to exit.
Oh, my God. This is so annoying. It's valid.
It's so annoying. It is valid.
Yeah.
But it's annoying.
It is so annoying.
Carl's still missing. She runs over to the front desk and, like, sees a button for the front door. So she pushes it, but it just remains locked. Nothing's working. Yeah. She can literally see the taxi on the curb right out front.
Oh my God.
And she like mimes to him because she's in like this all glass building, you know, how skyscrapers work. And she's like miming to him, like, just hold on for a second. I'll be right back.
Oh, jeez.
Like, he's like sitting on the curb seeing her. We'll talk about this. He's sitting on the curb like, I think he must understand that she can't. I don't know if he understands that she literally is locked inside.
Okay. Yeah.
Or if she just was gonna leave and then she's like, oh, wait, I forgot something. And he's like, come on, lady. You know?
Yeah.
I don't know what it looks like really from his perspective. Fair. But she runs out to P1, the level one. What did you think I said?
She runs out to pee. You took a little bit of a beat before the one. She runs out to P1.
This is obviously what you're supposed to do in a situation like this. Like, you're trapped in a building. You have to go and pee everywhere.
You gotta pee. You know, when you gotta pee, you gotta pee. So
she runs to P1, level one of the parking garage.
I got it.
To see if she can just, like, walk out to the street through the car exit, you know?
Yeah. Also, there should be a stairway in the parking garage. There's like got to be an emergency exit.
You would every parking garage I've been, I don't know if it's different with big building, secured buildings that are attached to like secured buildings in this way.
Yeah, fair.
Skyscrapers. But you're right. Cause like most of the parking garages I've been in have their like an exit stairwell. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But I'm going to let it pass because I feel like it's probably different for big underground parking garages.
Yeah.
She goes to the car exit, but it's gated shut. of course.
Oh my God.
There's a little attendant box right there and like a button that she can push for help and a speaker that she can talk through, you know, and yeah. She's just begging someone to open the gate, help her. She needs to get out. And of course, she hears a car horn beeping out on the street and then watches through the gate and sees the cab is just driving off now without her.
Yeah. I mean, I don't blame them for no. that either.
Yeah, so. I think they just thought she was like messing around and they can't wait all night and it's whatever, mm-hmm. it's Christmas, you know?
Exactly.
So she's frustrated, literally yeah. just doesn't know what to do or where to go at this point. And of course, this is when all of the lights in the parking garage go out and we are standing in darkness now. And now she's not frustrated, she's pissed. She's screaming boy. Like, hey, no, I'm still here. Hello. Like, well, literally what's happening is
right.
Someone has to be seeing this.
Yep.
So by the dim light of her flip phone, she starts walking around this parking garage just looking for someone. It's so funny. She just has her flip phone turned around and it's like the dimmest glow you ever saw.
Yeah.
But yeah, she's just looking around and she ends up back on P2 looking for that security guard, Thomas, to help her. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. She's not finding him anywhere. And then at one point, she ends up like tripping and falling to the ground. I don't even know what she tripped over. Like there was something. It's dark. Right. Who knows?
Right.
All of her things are all over the ground.
Oh my God. And no, this is it. That's my final straw. That is my final no. straw. Like, you know how mad I'm going to be at that moment? Like, I'm so pissed.
I would be crying. Yeah. Yep. I would be absolutely crying. Are you scared yet? Like, as her?
I don't think I'm about to be murdered or kidnapped right. or anything, but I'm definitely like a little spooked at the very least. Like, it's dark and nobody's here and I'm trapped in a parking garage. Yeah. I'm definitely spooked at the very okay. least.
All of her things on the ground. She grabs her cell phone again and stands back up. And in the light of the flip phone, we see Thomas standing right behind her.
Oh, hey, Thomas.
And he wraps his arm around her, pressing a cloth tightly aww. Against her face.
Damn it, Thomas.
And she starts struggling, trying to get away, but his hold on her is too strong. He keeps telling her to shush as she tries to scream. And she obviously doesn't listen, but after like 30 seconds or so, he doesn't have to worry about her making noise because the movie magic, quick-acting chloroform has yes. done its job and she passes out.
I do have to say, every time I've seen chloroform used, it is like super, super quick. How quick does it work IRL?
Apparently, I did look this up actually when I was doing this because mm-hmm. I'm like, I know it doesn't happen that quick, but how long does it take?
Yeah.
It takes like a couple minutes. It's still pretty fast.
Really?
Like 3 minutes or so before you'll get knocked out. It depends on the person too. You know, some people need extra like anesthesia, right. you know, yeah. like it's the same thing, but an average of like 3 minutes. But in movies, okay. it's like 10, it's 15 like, seconds.
Literally. I thought yeah. it actually worked that fast because I've always seen it work that fast.
Wouldn't that be terrifying?
Actually, yeah.
Yeah. I wonder how many idiots in this world have tried to do that and they're like yeah, what right. the heck, why are you not passing out?
That's not funny, but like
it's not funny, but like, you know, if you're trying to do that, you're an idiot, so I know yeah. you're standing there confused.
Yep.
You know,
like, oh, man, what's going on?
Cut to Angela waking up tied to a chair at a little dinner table set up in Thomas's office.
Oh, okay, Thanksgiving part two, but it's Christmas.
right And she opens her eyes up to quite a sight. He is sitting okay, I wrote he's shitting.
No, not after I watched Human Centipede this morning.
No. You can't escape it. It's returned.
Oh my God.
No, he is sitting across from her dressed as Santa.
He's shitting across from her dressed as Santa. I'm sorry.
And then when he sees that she's awake, he goes, ho, 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 Merry Christmas. You've been a good little girl.
No. Yeah. No, Santa.
She kind of fades out of consciousness again. And then when she comes back a second time around, more awake this time, mm-hmm. we see that she is now wearing different clothes. Yeah. A very like cleavage heavy V-neck white dress.
Oh.
And her hair is down from its corporate bun and she has red lipstick on now. And Thomas is at her side like, hey, calm down. You're okay. He's not Santa anymore.
Oh.
He took the costume off.
This is this really is feeling like an episode of Criminal Minds, actually. Like the vibes are unfortunate. Like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's just feeling like serial killer who has like an object, a person who is his obsession, and he wants to make her look like that obsession. And like, that's my Criminal Minds brain.
I need to watch Criminal Minds.
You too.
That's like a crazy amount of episodes, right?
Oh yeah. It's like 15 seasons.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's like a very slow work your way through it.
Yeah. Yeah. And, yeah. That's not a reaction.
Oh, hell no, it's not.
So she does calm down, still a little drugged up and like does not remember much because she asks, what happened to me?
Mm.
And Thomas tells her she just fell and she'll be all right. And Angela tells him she's going to be sick. So he's like, oh, don't worry, I'll get you some water. And as soon as he turns away, she quickly stands and tries to walk the opposite way with her hand like over her mouth, genuinely like she's about to be sick.
Oh.
But she immediately falls to the ground, finding that her ankle is cuffed to the table.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Yeah.
That's unfortunate.
Thomas finishes.
Like the dog.
Sorry. Oh, I thought you were saying the dog was also unfortunate. Like, what do you have against Rocky? Yes,
no,
yes.
No.
She's chained to the table like the dog. Yes.
Yeah, that's what I was getting at.
Angela throws up on the floor and Thomas cleans her up before helping her back into the chair, encouraging her to relax while he cleans up her puke. And Angela takes in Rocky sitting in the corner of the room and like the fancy romantic Christmas dining display in front of her with a single rose in the middle of the table.
Ew.
And of course, she's finally registering that she's literally chained to this table. So she's like internally freaking out.
But yeah.
Thomas is as jolly as ever and starts asking if she's hungry. He's like, I've got turkey, mashed potatoes, cranberries, cornbread. Mm-hmm. And when Angela doesn't answer, he looks down at himself like he'd forgotten that he had he does have the Santa costume on still, but he just has the beard off.
Oh, okay.
Before he was like bearded up and now he just has like the clothes of it on.
Coat, yeah.
He's like, oh yeah, sorry about this. I was just teasing. I didn't mean to scare you. Are you feeling any better? And Angela is looking down at her outfit and is like, what happened to my clothes?
Yeah, what am I wearing right now?
And he answers, well, like I said, you fell and your clothes got dirty. So maybe you'd like some wine to help you relax a bit.
Ew. No.
And Angela's pissed and she can't hold back anymore. So she's like, look, I don't know what you're doing, but you better just fucking untie me.
Mm-hmm.
Bold. I don't know. I don't know what my reaction is here. Based on how my nightmares go, I think I would play along.
Oh, no, I think about this all the time.
Yeah.
Like, because for every psycho, you can either get killed by playing along or you can survive by playing along.
Yes.
And it just depends on the type of psycho that you're dealing with and what they want from you.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like if they're dressing you up and all of that, chances are you're a substitute for somebody that they want. So if you play along, you might be good. So yeah, I think playing along would probably be the smarter thing here.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. I feel like based on these first vibes, like, okay, you want me to eat some turkey and mashed potatoes? I guess I will. They probably have drugs in them, I would be thinking. But yeah. I feel like I'm chained to this table. I just have to do what you want.
Right, exactly. Like, you can yell at him all you want, but you're not getting anywhere, so.
Right. Thomas just keeps working on opening the wine bottle that he has, like completely disregarding her, and is like, so this is California wine from Sonoma County.
That sounds right.
That's where I'm from. Where are you from?
Where are you from?
Angela asks him, what do you want?
Mm-hmm.
And nonchalantly, he's like, I want to know where you're from.
Shut the fuck up.
So she tells him she's from Reedfield and again is like, now cut the shit and tell me what you really want.
Yep.
And he tells her that he just wants her to relax. And then he pours out two glasses of wine and makes a toast. And he goes, here's to good friends and hometowns and Reedfield, wherever that is.
To be fair, I don't know where that
I know,
is.
I know. Never heard of it. Angela decides to take a new approach. And she goes, listen, Tom, I have some place to be. You know, I have obligations. And Thomas totally gets her. He's like, oh, yeah, I know. You, like, way too many. You need time for yourself, you know? You don't need to be at everyone's beck and call. And she's like, okay. She nods in agreement.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, So then maybe we should get a drink in the new year. And he stands and gestures around and is like, but I've already prepared everything. I mean, it's all here. And she nods and agrees that it looks really good. So he cuts her off there and is like, yeah, great. Well, let's eat.
No, that's not what I was getting at.
He sets down some plates of food for each of them and then asks, so do you want to say grace or should I? And she stares back at him like he's crazy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he laughs and is like, hell, let's skip it. I've never been religious anyway.
Oh.
So like, oh, okay. And then just, I wrote, okay, so just a warning. We're about to sit in this office, just us two, and talk for 10 more movie minutes.
Oh, shoot.
And it's like just very much setting up dynamic and his brain here.
Yeah.
So he starts yapping about a book that he's been reading lately and how it's teaching him how love is all about forgiveness. And Angela's like, yeah, that's nice. So Tom, my boyfriend knows where I work and he's going to come looking for me. Oh my God. It's immediately giving scream. I have a boyfriend. He plays football. He's big and he plays football. He's going to kick the shit out of you.
Yep.
So Thomas is shocked by this information, but he tries to keep it together and is like, so how long have you and your boyfriend been seeing each other? And Angela tells him 2 years. And he starts interrogating her question after question. Do you love him? Marriage plans? What does he do for work? Oh. What kind of car does he drive?
Oh.
And it's becoming clear based on Angela's answers and how long it takes her to come up with them that she's lying about having a boyfriend.
Yeah.
And Thomas comes to that conclusion too. And he goes, you haven't been very talkative since we first met. And now all of a sudden you're telling me all about your boyfriend.
Oh.
Which means we've either become best friends over dinner or you're lying. You don't really have a boyfriend, do you? But you want one.
Ew. What?
But you want one is so gross.
So gross.
She tells him to stop, but he's a psychotic narcissist. So he keeps going. He's like, you've got a good family. You've got Lorraine, Jimmy, and Rose. They love you. They're probably worried about you. Maybe we should give them a call. And he brings his little wired office phone over and tells her that she's going to call Lorraine and get out of her commitments for tonight.
Oh, okay.
He makes sure to put the phone on speaker before he lets her dial. Yep, yep.
Because I always want to use that move where you just say things that are normal but that don't make sense.
Yes.
I love that move.
Yes. Like there's like this chilling 911 call. I never know what's real or AI these days.
But it's true.
Chilling 911 call where it's like someone ordering a pizza on 911. And the person like on the other end is like, oh, I know what you mean. And like, do you need help? Is there someone there? Is there a knife? And you just say yes or no.
Right. Exactly.
So it sounds like you can be ordering a pizza, but.
Yeah. That's like something they use a lot in movies and shows and stuff. And I always find it very interesting.
Lorraine gets on the phone and Angela tells her that she's not feeling well. Mm. And Lorraine is just like, huh?
Like, yeah.
Where are you?
Yeah, like what happened to you being on your way?
Yeah. Meanwhile, by the way, Thomas is like playing with her hair and then wrapping his hands around her throat from behind.
Ew.
Yeah.
Okay, cute.
So Angela continues, I'm at home. I went home. And Lorraine's like, right, well, the last time we talked, you said you were on your way. Like, what about the costume? And then in the background, we hear Lorraine's husband go, you should know your sister by now.
Yikes. Yeah, they kind of set her up as like the workaholic.
Yes.
So, you know, it's like she probably has done this before.
Lorraine adds on, you know, Angela, it would be nice if you could put your family ahead of your work sometimes. So someone new takes the phone then, an older woman, and she's like, okay, that's enough. Angie, what's wrong? And Angela's trying not to break down crying. She pulls herself together enough to go, hey, Mom, I'm here. I think it's just the flu. I just need some rest.
Ooh, yeah.
And her mom doesn't sound so sure, but she's like, okay, hopefully you're better in time for lunch tomorrow. And she's like, and sweetie, don't worry about the costume, okay? Merry Christmas, Angel. I love you.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Nice little mom,
her mom is very understanding.
Mm-hmm.
Would you have just taken your chance and said what you could while you had them on the phone? You know, knowing that Thomas is going to know and be very mad.
No, I would not say anything.
I think I would.
The only thing I might try to do is say something a little, like, I would try to act weird, but I wouldn't come out and say anything.
Right.
I'd rather try and give off a vibe. Not that it would work, but I, in my mind, if I say something, he's just going to kill me. Because, like, if I say something, he's going to, we're not going to stay here. He's either going to kill me or he's going to take me somewhere else. Mm. And, like, I mean, I guess they would know at that point. Yeah, but I don't know.
Like, I would say, like, Thomas, security guard, killing me, whatever. Like, I would try to get his identity across, because then it's like, okay, is he going to stop before it gets worse? Because now his name is out there. He's going to be investigated. People are going to come and get a story. Like, are you really going to kill me? And when your name is out there, I don't know. Maybe. But I don't know.
Yeah. I don't think there's, like, necessarily a right answer.
No. No.
Because it's like, I don't know. It's tough.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I don't blame her for going along with him here.
Yeah.
At all. Angela tells her mom that she loves her too, and Thomas hangs up the call. And he sits down next to Angela with a smitten smile on his face and is like, that's the best Christmas present anyone's ever given me. Thank you.
Oh.
And I have a present for you. And he brings her over a red gift box with a green bow. The gift is probably like a little bigger than a shoebox, and he encourages her to open it. And in it, she finds a VHS tape.
Ooh, hell yeah. So,
I know. I love a VHS tape in horror.
Absolutely.
He pops it in the TV and plays it for her, and it's security footage of her in the elevator with Mr. Harper. It's clearly right after the office Christmas party.
Oh, no.
And he very aggressively forces himself on her, like trying to kiss her.
Ew.
And she manages to push him off and get out of the elevator. And Thomas is very passionate about this moment. He's angry at Mr. Harper and goes, you fucked up now, asshole.
Oh.
And then pulls himself together again and is like, sorry, I had to see that. Want to go for a stroll? And then proceeds to work on unlocking the cuff around her ankle while he mumbles on saying, like, those guys always do whatever they want, which is just crazy irony.
Yeah, right.
As he's focused on that cuff, Angela slowly goes to grab the fork on the table in front of her.
Okay, yep.
And as soon as her cuff clicks open, she brings the fork down hard on Thomas's back, like instantly breaking skin. We see blood stain his white shirt right away.
Yeah, yeah.
And the fork like stays stuck in his back.
Ew.
Yeah. We should have gone for the neck, but you know.
I was actually thinking that. Yeah, the neck. Yeah. But like maybe, it was, I don't know how, like if it was just fast and she just got what she could there.
It's scary. Yeah. She goes to run but doesn't get two steps in before he trips her and she falls to the ground, and then he straddles her back and like forces her wrists into the handcuffs now from like behind her back.
Yeah, that's a vulnerable position. So you're kind of screwed there.
Yeah. Rocky's freaking out, barking at them through all of this. Mm-hmm. Thomas pulls the fork out of his back and is like, why would you do that to me? Come on, let me help you up now. He's like still caring for her. She doesn't want his help, obviously, but he gets her on her feet and she's like, please just let me go. I won't tell anyone. And he's like, oh, I know. I believe you. I just need to show you something. So cut to him putting her in the passenger seat of his car and then getting in the driver's seat himself. And he drives her on down to the lowest level, P4, where we find Mr. Harper tied up to a chair in a corner, like duct tape over his mouth.
Right, right.
And Angela's like, oh my God, Tom, what is this? And he says, this is his present to her, obviously.
Oh my, duh.
And then he pulls out a baton that he has on him and like holds it out to her, telling her to take this and show him. Show him you're not a slut. Take this and teach him he can't be touching every woman he wants.
Oh.
And Angela's like, this is about what happened in that elevator. You don't understand. That was a stupid mistake. And Thomas is confused. He's like, what? He tried to rape you. And she's like, no, he got a little out of hand at the party. He was drunk and he apologized. Pause. Mm-hmm. Three men wrote this script.
Oh, no, that makes it so much worse.
And I do find this pretty odd. Like, how obviously in that situation, your boss who like tried to kiss you at the office party, slime ball, okay?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. But I don't want him tied up in this chair, duct taped and murdered. Sure. So I understand that she shouldn't want him to be murdered here.
Yep.
But the way that like the actual dialogue of her being like, it was no big deal. It was just a mistake.
It seems sincere from her perspective.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That's what I was kind of wondering. Cause it at first I was like, okay, maybe it is like, all right, let's just try to get past this. And if I try and play it down, then yeah, maybe he won't kill him, blah, 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 whatever.
No.
But yeah, as soon as you said written by three men, it's like, yeah. Oh, that reminds me, I read a book once where like there was man like raped some woman, and then like the whole point of the book at the end, like last 20 pages, is the whole family forgives him, and I'm like, ooh, what did that's I just read? Crazy. I had to look up reviews, and wild. Everyone was like, what the fuck just happened? I was like, okay, so it's not just me.
Huh. That's weird. Yeah. Forgiveness, I will say forgiveness as a theme in entertainment is super interesting to me. I think it's one of the hardest things to do ever is forgiveness. And I think sometimes we don't allow ourselves to forgive as much as we should. Mm-hmm. However, when it comes to guys like this, yeah. I don't know. I even when you give them 30 years to grow and truly regret, it still is just like, how could you ever?
Yeah. This is interesting.
Yeah. And she also like genuinely seems so surprised. She's like, wait, what? This is about the elevator? And I'm like,
yeah.
Well, yeah.
But, like, of course.
Team Thomas?
Yeah, right.
No. I don't want him to die, but okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's like, no, he was just drunk. He apologized. Thomas is like, oh, he apologized. Oh, you think you're the first woman he tried to do that to? I've seen him try to touch every woman in this building. He's a pervert. Angela keeps sticking up for him, saying he's not a pervert, that he's a good man. Quote.
What is happening?
I'm not sure about that, but okay, there's a lot of back and forth here, and Angela keeps using his name. She keeps saying Tom when she's talking to him.
Okay.
And it literally makes him lose his mind. He thinks she's saying his name a lot on purpose to get through to him on a human level, as if she's a victim who needs to play mind games with her captor to keep herself safe. He's very aware of that as a tactic.
Yeah.
But he keeps trying to make her understand that she doesn't need to do that, and he doesn't have any plans to harm her, and her acting this way is driving him crazy. Like, he doesn't get why she's so scared of him. He tells her it's Mr. Harper that she should be scared of. And in the end, Angela tells Thomas, okay, I'll do it. Untie me and I'll do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
For sure.
So Thomas thinks about it and is like, no, you're a good person. I never should have asked you to do this. It's my job to protect you. So he gets out of his car with his baton, and before walking over to Mr. Harper, he's like, okay, Angela, please don't try to run away. Okay, thanks. And then he goes over to Mr. Harper, and you know he's got to give his like big speech. Like, you're an Ivy League piece of shit that likes taking advantage of girls. And he goes on for a couple minutes along those lines. And then he hits him over the head a couple times, hard hits, and then leaves him there to bleed out. He's still alive, still conscious, but bleeding out.
Nice.
So back in the car, of course, Angela's freaking out. She's crying, and Thomas gets pissed at her, and he's like, why do you care? Do you like being touched? Do you want to get laid here in the parking garage? Is it a career thing? Did you fuck him to get a promotion?
Oh my God. What? I just hate this.
I know. She just keeps crying, and Thomas is getting more and more pissed, and he goes, okay, you're right. We're not going to leave him here like this.
Okay.
And he speeds up the car, charging at Mr. Harper.
Oh, no.
But then he stops a couple inches away from hitting him. Hard stop. Oh. Angela's freaking out and asking, like, what he's doing. And Thomas says, I just want to take him out for a little drive. We're just going for a little drive. Mm-hmm. And starts slowly driving into him. Thomas is on a chair with wheels. I think his ankles were tied, so he couldn't really move around too much still.
Oh, but yeah.
It's on wheels. So the car starts to gently push him forward, and Thomas slowly puts a little more power on the gas, a little more, and we realize he's aiming to run Thomas right into the concrete wall ahead.
Yeah, great.
And he does. Bones crunch, instant death. And Angela screams and manages to open her car door, still, you know, handcuffed behind her back.
Yeah.
Open the car door, start running. This is our first survivability check-in. Our halfway survivability check-in.
Halfway survivability check-in. And I'm going to go ahead and say that we're just girly pop here. We're not.
Well, yes. I mean, if we could identify with him, with the boss at this time, I would count him. But I'm not counting myself as him because I would never be him.
I'm not him. Good. Okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, up to this point, I haven't done, in my mind, I've done pretty much everything she's done. Not literally, like, all of the aggressive stuff that she's done, maybe not. Like, the fact that he didn't kill her over the fork thing, like, tells me he truly means it when he doesn't want to hurt her.
And he truly means it when he was like, I was reading a book and it taught me that love is about forgiveness. Like, he just immediately forgave her for doing that. Didn't care.
So I'm going to give myself literally a 99.
Okay. Yeah. I gave myself a 95 because, you know, wiggle room.
Yep. Wiggle room.
You
know,
you say the wrong thing and maybe you do hit something that snaps inside him. All right. But yeah, right now he wants us alive, clearly.
Yep.
So yes, Angela's still handcuffed, but right now they're on P4, the lowest level. And she manages to make it back up to P2 while on some security cameras, we see that Thomas is dealing with Mr. Harper's body, dragging it off somewhere.
Oh, he's more concerned about dealing with the body than with her. I guess he's confident she can't get out of here.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
At one point, she stops to readjust and like move her cuffed hands from behind her back to the front of her now. Like she puts her legs through and everything.
Yeah.
And she stops at this like middle junction where she can see up into another stairwell. I don't know. She can't like go into the stairwell, but this sort of like fenced wall partition thing is there. And she can see someone walking on a floor up ahead.
Oh.
Yeah. And she screams for help, but they just walk past, don't hear her, don't react at all.
Weird.
Really weird. And nothing comes back around with that. So I don't know.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's strange.
So she makes a run for Thomas's office, and Rocky's barking at her the whole time, as he does, but she ignores him and goes for the phone first, but the line is literally physically cut.
Ooh.
So next she tries to go for her purse, but it's sitting on like the edge of a chair that's pretty close to the leashed Rocky, and so she's very careful. Oof, Rocky's like clearly, unfortunately, been trained as like an attack dog.
Yeah.
And when she finally gets her hands on her purse, Rocky lunges and gets a hold of the purse in his mouth. And it's a game of tug of war until the purse tears apart. But Angela's able to grab her cell phone when it falls to the ground.
Okay, good.
Of course, when she opens the little flip phone, it just says no service.
Mm-hmm.
So she runs for the car gate of the garage that leads to the street on P1. And that this gate is like an industrial metal fence gate, you know, but you can still see out to the street. And so she screams for help. Of course, no one is outside on the street to help her. I don't know. In New York on Christmas night, I get that it's Christmas and people are going to be home more, but
there should be people there, realistically.
Yeah. I will say actually that we do see like one homeless woman like with a little shopping cart, and she's walking along and she hears that. She just starts screaming, like echoing her, like, somebody help me, somebody help me. Like she's not like very with it and able to help. So she pulls her phone out and there's still no signal right here. However, when she reaches her hands through the holes of the fence, her phone does get a signal.
Ooh.
So she scrambles and calls or dials 911, but then Rocky like barks in the distance and it causes her to jump and drop her phone. We wouldn't do that, right?
I don't think – it's hard for me to say for sure, but I think
it's hard
in my brain, as soon as I put my phone out there and see it has service, I'm holding on to that thing for dear life.
Right. Like nothing will make me drop this thing right now.
Right.
So on the ground, she reaches out through the holes in the fence to try and reach it. But of course, it's like just out of reach.
Yep.
Ugh. And she actually completely breaks off her entire like pointer finger nail in the process from clawing at the concrete floor.
Ew.
Now she starts to hear Thomas in the distance calling out her name, looking for her. So she starts talking through the gate to the phone. And no, I did not see her actually like call, like press call on 911. But I think she's just hoping like maybe it went through in the fall or something.
Yep.
She's like, hey, if anyone can hear me, I'm trapped in the underground parking structure of the Arcadia building. It's 2370 Park Avenue. Someone's trying to kill me. And then she runs off before Thomas can find her. It's this like tense moment where we think she's still at the fence. But then when we get into Thomas's point of view, he walks up to the fence and now she's gone.
Yes.
And she has managed to make it up to the elevators on P1. And remember, there's like that locked door that you have to get through to the elevator room.
Right.
but she had grabbed a bunch of key cards from Thomas's office when she was in there.
Sure.
And she starts swiping them one by one until one of them actually works, and she gets inside and makes it into an elevator. When she presses the button for the lobby, it's not going anywhere. And the doors closed, like the elevator doors closed, and then they just opened back up again on this P1 level. And when they open up again, Thomas is standing on the other side of the key card door with Rocky, and they see each other.
Question, there's no emergency call button in this elevator.
Oh, you'll find out.
Oh, okay, never mind. Sorry. Mm-hmm. My bad.
We'll find out. So she quickly clicks the closed doors button in the elevator, desperate to just get away, even if not to the lobby. Like, just get me on a different floor from this man. And so she presses the button for P2 just to get some distance. And she keeps trying the lot. Like, once she's on P2, she, again, tries the lobby button, but it's not working. So she presses, like, the emergency stop kind of shuts the elevator down. And then it has one of those buttons where you can, like, actually call for help and get through to someone. So she presses that button and they go, Fibro Security, hello. And she's like, oh my God, I'm being kidnapped. Hello.
help.
I work at Brighter Smith and Steinberg. It's 2370 Park Avenue and I'm hiding in the elevator. Please, can you call 911? And they're like, okay, calm down, miss. Is there someone with you right now? Calm down is crazy.
Crazy. They always say that. I mean, it must be like, always. I know it's for a reason. I get that they need you to remain calm so you can get the information across, but they're always like, all right, stay calm. And it's like, no, I'm just not feel calm. Like
that should be like a no-no phrase. And you would think. You should be like, can you speak more clearly for me? Like something like that. Like, do not tell someone in the situation to stay calm.
Yeah, no, it's crazy.
So yeah, they ask, is there anyone with you, someone with you right now? And she explains that she's alone and he's in the parking garage and he already killed someone. And they ask, did you see him do it?
What?
And she's like, yes, actually I did. His name is Thomas and he's the parking attendant in my building. Please hurry, I'm in danger. And they go, ma'am, you have to relax and take a deep breath.
I'm going to kill somebody next, okay? My turn.
Oh my gosh, right. She loses it on these people and tells them to stop telling her what to do and just call 911.
Yeah, like what the hell is happening?
They don't call 911. Instead, they go, the police? No, I'm sure he's just trying to help you. Right, Angela? So this is when she realizes that it's Tom. He's the security guy. Like that's who you're calling when you call the emergency security in this elevator.
Okay, see, that's not helpful.
And it's crazy too. He like put on an Indian accent for that. He was talking in an Indian accent. So that was wild.
Oh dear.
Yeah, she tells him that she called the cops and is going to stay in this elevator as long as it takes for them to get here.
Okay, well, I fear he knows that you didn't call the cops.
How is he going to believe that? But, you know, he's got monologues to deliver. He goes on and on about how she should respect herself more and she'll grow to love him over time.
Oh, well,
She just needs to give him a chance. Meanwhile, she's having a mental breakdown on the floor of this elevator.
Uh-huh.
Some time passes and she hears a loud thud coming from above the elevator. She can't see it, but we get a shot of Thomas opening up the elevator doors on the next floor up.
Like,
he drops a water hose down the elevator shaft.
What?
Before turning it on full blast, and water starts seeping down into the elevator, like raining through the seams in the wall.
What the hell?
Yeah. Rapid pace. After like a minute, Angela looks down and water's already gathered at her ankles.
Oh.
But she stays inside and screams, I'm not coming out. Like, I don't care. I think she's like, okay, kill me. Like, I'm not going to give you the satisfaction of like having me, you know? Yep. Mm-hmm. And then a body gets dropped through the ceiling of the elevator. Oh, yeah. Lights are flickering at this point.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay.
The water gets all the way up to her waist.
Oh, wow. That's a lot of water.
Yeah. I don't really know why the water's able to seep through from the top, but it doesn't then seep through the bottom. But we're not gonna talk about that.
Yeah, that's fine.
And so, lights flickering, water up to the waist, a body gets dropped through the ceiling of the elevator, crashes into the water. It's our front desk man, Carl.
No, not Carl.
I know. He was a really nice dude.
Aw.
And seeing him is what makes her decide to push the button for P3. And the doors open on that level and the water pushes them out in this huge, like, wave. And she's hoping Carl's okay. But when she checks on him, he's just not moving. I don't know if she thinks he's unconscious. We aren't seeing, like, any blood or stab wounds or anything at this point. But personally, when his body got dropped into the elevator, I immediately assumed him to be dead. You know?
Yeah.
So there's nothing Angela can do about him. She leaves the elevator room and hears Thomas in the distance on this parking garage level calling out, "Angela, you must be freezing out here."
Oh my God.
And we see Thomas walk up to the elevator hall to find that she's gone. However, he quickly finds wet footprints leading him in her direction. And he can see that she's hiding underneath a parked truck. So he is monologuing about how all everyone wants is for him to be forever alone in this parking garage as he slashes the tires on this truck, causing the body of the vehicle to lower down closer and closer to Angela. I know. I don't think I've seen that before. And I was like, oh, I hate that. Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Not a fan of that.
So yeah, when he punctures that second tire, she does have to roll out from underneath it.
Oh, wow.
But she does so on the opposite side of where Thomas is standing and is able to, like, somehow, don't ask me how, but somehow crawl her way to a vent, a huge vent, and drop down to a lower level of the garage from there.
Okay.
Sure. Yeah. Just accept that.
Yeah.
Thomas sees this a little too late and she's out of sight now, but he knows that she got onto that next lower level and is running off. Then we go back to Carl in the elevator room. And when he turns, when Thomas turns him over onto his back, we do see that there's a fair amount of blood streaming from his head. And Thomas is like, "Way to ruin Christmas, Carl." And that's that scene.
Okay.
So now Angela has found a new spot on P2 to just sit and cry in a corner.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. But Thomas is watching her from his security cams in his office. Ugh. And he decides to start playing a record through the garage speakers for her. Oh, obviously, Blue Christmas by Elvis Presley. He's very lonely without her, you know?
Yeah.
And she looks up and notices the speaker right above her head, which then leads her to notice the security cam trained on her on one of those, like, concrete columns. So she scurries off and finds an emergency axe down a tiny hallway nearby.
Oh, okay.
Breaks the glass, takes the axe, and goes around and destroys all the cameras she can see on P2.
Okay.
We see the cams turning to, like, a no signal screen briefly before turning to the next working cam. And Thomas isn't noticing this because he's currently pretending that he's Elvis Presley and is really into the show that he's putting on, singing along to Blue Christmas to a pretend crowd.
Nice.
Angela has made her way to Thomas's office, still being all sneaky sneak, and she's got her axe at the ready. And remember, she is still also handcuffed.
Oh my God, I forgot about that, actually.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. They're, like, just in front of her now instead of behind, but she's, like, holding the axe with, like, handcuffed hands.
Right.
But when she makes it into the office, there's no Thomas. And there's a tape playing on the TV, a new one. And it's a little home video Thomas put together when he kidnapped her and she was still unconscious.
Oh.
Now in her white dress, and we see him putting the red lipstick on her and telling her how beautiful she is. And then caressing and groping her boobs.
Oh, okay.
And Angela screams and just takes the axe to the TV, shattering the screen.
Oh.
And she's about to take the axe to all of his security cam screens too, but just before she does, she notices that there's a literal police car and officer outside of his car just outside the gated entry to the garage, like pulled up to the gate.
Yeah.
She starts pushing a whole bunch of buttons, trying to use the speaker to get through to the officer, but it's not working, or she just doesn't know how to work it.
Yeah.
And she turns around and comes face to face with Thomas, who tases her.
Oh, damn it.
Yeah. Upsetting. This has, like, a paralyzing effect on her. Mm-hmm. And Thomas lies her down on the ground and then hurriedly starts cleaning up his office. All the food, the broken TV he pushes into hiding under a table. All while the officer is still buzzing at the entry upstairs.
Yeah.
Thomas eventually answers the buzz and calmly is like, "Hello, officer, how can I help you?" And the officer responds, "Can you open up the gate, please?" And he looks really annoyed and slightly panicked, but answers, "Yes, officer, I'll be right up." Then he leans down to Angela again and is like, "I'm really sorry, but I have to do this." And then he tases her in the ribs again for good measure.
Yep.
To hopefully keep her down during this situation. So Thomas hurriedly cleans the blood off his face, changes his clothes, and then makes it to the gate on P1 and opens the gate for the officer. And the officer tells him that they received a disturbance call for this address.
Okay.
And asks Thomas if he's heard or noticed anything strange tonight. Obviously, Thomas is like, "No, real quiet night tonight. I don't know." So the officer waves in the other officer who's in the driver's seat of the police car.
Oh.
And he drives in, and the police driver asks Thomas if he wants to hop in the back and ride with them as they do their rounds and check everything out. They can just like drop him at his office when they get that far.
Sure.
Why not? So Thomas is like, okay. And he closes the gate behind them and then hops in the back of the cruiser.
Mm.
So yes, they drop him off at the office. Thomas thanks them, tells them to be careful on P3 because there's a broken water main. They're not finding anything suspicious. As soon as the officers drive off to check out the rest of the garage, Thomas is on the cams following them as like best he can. And we see him tense up when they pass by a specific car because in the trunk of that car is Angela. And we see her gasp awake from the light of like the headlights coming through the keyhole for whatever reason.
Gotcha.
But the officers keep driving. She doesn't even have the time to pound on the trunk before like they've driven past already.
Yep.
The officers do stop at all the water damage down on the P3 hallway, but they're just kind of like, "What the hell is that about?" and keep on driving.
I mean, you were called for a disturbance. Shouldn't you kind of be thinking, "Oh, this is weird"?
Because I'm not sure if Carl is still in that elevator room.
I was thinking that too. Where's the body?
He could be, but like we know we had that scene where like Thomas came to his body and would like made the room Christmas. So I don't know if that's when he moved, hit it.
For sure, yeah.
But I don't know. Is there blood on the ground in there? I don't know.
It's got to be something.
Something has to look weird in that room. But no, they just keep driving. They make it through the whole parking garage and back up to Thomas's office without seeing anything concerning. No idea where Mr. Harper's body is either.
Mm.
And also, like, Angela was screaming her heart out and, like, pounding from the inside of the trunk when they drove past back a second time, back up to the office. But Thomas decided to play Santa Baby loudly through the speakers of the garage.
Oh.
So the officers did not hear her. Up at Thomas's office, they just tell him to keep his eyes peeled, and they're ready to head out. So Thomas takes the stairs up to P1, meeting them at the gate, ready to let them out at the gate.
Mm-hmm.
But on P2, Angela does escape from the trunk of the car. That same shot, the wooden stick through the keyhole, and then she's suddenly like has a crowbar pipe as well that I guess Thomas left in the back of his car with her.
Cool.
Mistake on his end. But it works for us. But yeah, she's out and she has a weapon and she's hoping she's not too late. She goes screaming up to P1, telling them to wait, and she needs help, but by the time she makes it to the gate, the officers have left. The gate is closing, and Thomas is standing there with Rocky on a leash, just smiling.
Oh, my God.
At him.
This is, like, so frustrating.
So frustrating.
Had all these things that, like, it's all legit. Like, it's all, like, it's not
which makes
fault.
It more frustrating.
Exactly. Exactly. Because, like, I can't be mad at her because she's doing well, but it's the timing never works out.
Angela knows by the sight in front of her, they're probably like 100 yards apart right now. She like sees the gate closing and Thomas and Rocky there. She knows it's time for her to run because Thomas is going to let Rocky off of his leash.
Yeah. Yeah.
So she goes running and she makes it down to P2 again. She got a decent head start, can't see Rocky, but can hear him gaining on her from behind.
Ooh, creepy.
So she goes and like busts out a window of a car and jumps in and just tries to stay quiet in the backseat of this random car.
Okay.
That lasts about 5 seconds before Rocky launches himself through the broken window attacks her. Yeah. She takes a couple like half-hearted swings at him with the crowbar.
Yeah.
But then when he like bites down hard on her arm, that's when she completely impales him with the pointy end of the crowbar.
Oh.
killing him. And I wish I could say The Last of Us 2 prepared me for this moment, but it still hurts. Like, it's so sad because it's like the dogs were trained to do this and that they shouldn't be. And that's so sad.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to kill the dog because of what its owner trained them to do, but it's so annoying.
Yeah.
But I get it. Like, he's going to – I get
it. Oh, yeah. I would do it too.
I don't know if I could. I don't know if I would let the dog kill me. I don't know if I could kill a dog, even if it's doing that to me. I don't know. Like, I feel like it's 50-50.
Interesting.
Now nearby, we see – well, Angela sees a separate, like, rent-a-car office space.
Oh.
So she uses her crowbar to break the door open and get in there. And she finds a phone, a working phone.
Oh, my God.
And she dials 911. And on the other end of this 911 call, they go, 911, all lines are busy at the moment. Someone will be with you shortly. Is that real?
I do think it is.
It must be, but
– yeah. I don't
think what are the chances?
I don't think it's common.
Right.
I mean, maybe – I don't know if Christmas Eve for some reason would have a higher rate of calls. I feel like they probably would. I don't
maybe.
Know.
Maybe. But like, yeah, it's just like just our luck at
of
this
course.
Point.
Of course.
So anyway, she finds like a random file, like a metal file, nail file, in a pen cup and starts to mess with her handcuffs, still trying to get those off of the front. I know. You keep forgetting that they're there. For most of this movie, it's just like the poor actress.
Yeah, right. Like, that must suck.
In them the whole time.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Thomas has found Rocky dead in the back of that random car. And is shouting, Angela, what is wrong with you? I try to help you and you kill my dog?
Yeah, that's what happened. Just like that.
He goes, a poor defenseless animal. How could you do that? Okay. Then he finds a bloody handprint on the door to the rent-a-car space. So with his flashlight and his taser, he lets himself in. Angela is no longer behind the desk, but the phone is off the hook, and he can hear a 911 operator asking over and over if anyone is there.
Oh, my God. It's like... everything is just not working out for us.
He hangs up the phone and then is like, you're trying to get me fired, aren't you? Like, yes, that's what we're trying. We want you fired. That's why we're doing all of this, Thomas.
Yep.
And he starts to make his way through the back rooms of this rent-a-car situation office, whatever it is. And she's huddled in like a corner back here. And he's like, honey, what would we do if I got fired? We can't just live off of your salary. I genuinely, I'm so curious. Like, what if she was like, okay, let's go home, sweetie. Like, would you just go home and play house with her?
That is interesting. Like, because earlier he made a comment about, like, time. Like, over time you'll get to like me or whatever.
Yeah.
And I'm like, serious? Like, I might at that point go along with it legitimately.
Yeah.
Because people like this, I'm always – now, obviously, I'm very naive, but, like, I'm always like, okay, like, I could last a little while until they felt comfortable enough, like, I could find a way out of whatever situation this is. Now, I know that's extremely naive, but, like, that's what I'm thinking
right
now with this movie, right?
That's – I'm in the same boat where I'm like, I really think if you play along, he would drive out of here with you and you'd be staying at his house with him and you'd get a moment where he's in the bathroom and you call the cops.
Exactly.
Like,
yep.
But then there's that moment where he's like, stop saying my name. I know what you're doing.
Right.
So he's like more aware than you think. So it's like, okay, if I play along, is he just going to see through that too?
Exactly.
It's weird. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's talking like, I can't get fired. Bro, you killed two people already.
Yeah, what do you think's going to happen?
What are you thinking? Like, I don't know what this man is thinking.
No.
So eventually he opens a closet expecting to find her in there, but no, she's not there. And when he turns around, she is there. Jump scare. Oh. And she sprays him in the face with a bottle of who knows what, like maybe a car thing since we're in the rent-a-car. Like,
oh, sure.
And she gets him good. She gets him good. And then she drops the spray and runs for it before he can retaliate. Also, when she was in the rent-a-car, she broke a lockbox open with her crowbar and it was full of car keys. So now she's running through the parking garage with like a handful of car keys, just pressing their buttons, hoping that she can find one that'll light up and she can use it.
Yep.
The crowbar that she used to do that, she maneuvered it between the door handles of the rent-a-car so that Thomas is now trapped in there.
Oh, okay, girly.
She's doing great. I don't know if I would be – maybe I could figure out the key thing. You know, you see the box on the wall and it's like, oh, there might be keys in there. We're in a rental car.
Yep.
Crowbar, I don't know.
I don't know if I would think that. Like,
I don't know if I think that either in that panic state. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
He's throwing chairs at the glass, but they're bouncing right off. And Angela finds a winner. She finds a matching car to a set of keys. So she gets in. She turns the keys in the ignition. And it starts just fine.
Let's go.
She drives off just as Thomas does manage to break a pane of glass and get out of the rental car.
Okay.
Now, she's not the best driver because she still hasn't managed to finesse her way out of her handcuffs with that file. But it's fine. We're fine. She makes it up to P1 and guns it when she sees the gate ahead. We got to hit it hard to try to knock it down.
Oh, jeez. I'm scared.
Just as she's about to make contact with that gate, Thomas, in his own car, completely T-bones her.
Oh, my God. I'm going to lose my mind with this one.
Because she's just doing it all right. Like, please, let it pay off.
I know.
Yeah, he T-bones her, preventing the attempted escape. And, like, okay, Angela doesn't care. She drives away down to P2. You know, like, at least she's safe in the car right now. Mm-hmm. We want to keep it that way. Thomas shortcuts somehow and ends up getting ahead of her so that when she turns – literally how? When she turns a corner on P2, his headlights are shining right back at her when she comes to a stop at the end of this, like – juncture, I don't know, alley. And so they both stop and both headlights are just like head on with each other and he starts revving his engine, like daring her to keep driving. So Angela puts her seatbelt on and they both start gunning it for each other with a game of chicken.
Yep.
Who's gonna veer out of the way first? Well, Thomas is a little bitch. And of course, he's the one to quickly swerve around Angela at the last second. She never lets up, drives straight ahead, and girl is drifting all over this parking garage trying to speed back to the gate before he can get there again. She does hit a concrete column at a certain angle that causes her entire car to flip a couple times before it lands on its wheels again. It was a rough tumble.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like it was great.
She's knocked out and her head is like down on the steering wheel, causing a continuous honk to just screech from this vehicle.
Damn.
And Thomas makes it over to her. He opens up the driver's side door, pulls her off the wheel, and then he's very worried and he checks for a pulse.
Oh my God.
And she's alive, so he's relieved and he's like, I'm going to help you out, okay? And then he looks down at her hands and sees something that worries him, as it should, because next thing we know, we find out Angela was holding that metal file in her hands and she stabs it straight up into Thomas's eye.
Ooh, not the eye. Damn.
Risky move here. I think she was pretending to be knocked out. I think she was kind of like genuinely, you know, I don't know, not doing great after the tumble, but.
Sure.
I think she took the chance, knew he would come and help her, and then, you know, goes for the eye.
Hell yeah.
So he falls to the ground outside the car, and she wastes no time in getting out and putting her handcuffed hands around his throat, pulling him back against her and, like, against the cuff's chain.
Yeah.
And she's kind of mad, and she's like, help me. Help. Her delivery here actually made me laugh. She's like, help me. Help me. Why don't you let me help you for a change? Like, she's just so angry.
Get him, girly.
And once he is successfully – she knocks him out, like, manages to knock him out by, like, choking him with the handcuffs. And then she grabs his ring of keys that he keeps on him.
Okay.
And she finds the key to undo her handcuffs, gets out of them finally.
Okay.
And then she handcuffs him to the car door.
Okay.
He, of course, immediately comes to and, like, grabs her ankle, but she manages to pull herself out of his hold, then grabs his taser, runs and leans against a nearby pillar, just catching her breath.
Mm-hmm.
And Thomas is like, why are you doing this, Angela? I just wanted to be friends. Like, I'm always alone. Why can't we just spend more time together?
Yeah.
Angela just starts limping away, and he's so whiny and sad and comes off, like, genuinely confused. But then he gets angry as she continues to ignore him walking away. And he's like, Angela, wait, why? You stupid. Oh, he says, you stupid fucking cunt. He
screams at her. I knew you were going to say that as soon as you were like, oh, I was like, I know what word's coming.
And then when he calls her that, she turns and points the taser down at the oil that has been leaking out of this crashed car.
Oh, shit.
That he's attached to.
Yeah.
And she's like, she goes, Merry Christmas, Thomas, before tasing the oil, which causes them to go up in flames, run all the way back to the car, enveloping Thomas completely.
Oh, my God.
And an explosion happens. The car explodes. Thomas explodes with it. Goodbye, Thomas.
Okay. That's satisfying to me.
Yes. Thank God. That is
wildly satisfying to me.
The sprinkler system does get activated, but not too soon, you know. And she's got his ring of keys, so she makes it back up to the entry gate, and she's able to open it now with a key on there.
Okay.
And she makes it out to the street where it's a beautiful snowy Christmas morning, and ambulances and fire trucks are driving closer and closer from the distance because, you know. The sprinkler system was activated.
Sure.
And the screen fades to black as we hear a paramedic ask, hey, are you okay? And that's it. That's the end?
P2. Oh, my God.
She did
it. Wow. She did do it. And wow. Okay. A satisfying ending because it's so frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
That movie is so frustrating. It's always the last second something doesn't work out. So
yeah.
At the end, even when you said the screen fades to black, and I was like, okay, yeah, but then what happens next? Like,
and then we find out he's alive, you know?
Yeah, exactly. That is the way it felt.
Yeah.
But goodbye, Thomas. I'm definitely curious, like, what his motive was.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, I know he says, like, the elevator, but, like, was he in love with her? Has he been watching her for a long time? Has he done this before? Not that any of that is important, but, like, I was kind of thinking of it from, like, what's his true motive the whole time?
I know. I'm not sure about his motive. We know that he knows her family members. He has to have had an eye on her and stalking to some capacity for a little while to know that.
Sure.
I'm also curious about his comment about Mr. Harper, like, assaulting a bunch of people in the office.
Right.
And I'm is he making that up because he just wants to be mad at someone and be a hero to her? Or is that true? It's like, it doesn't matter, but I'm curious about how truthful he's being with her and with himself. Like, obviously, if he's being honest, he can be honest throughout this whole thing because he's a psychopath and he believes the things that he's saying and he believes he's the hero. He believes that, you know, this is normal.
Right.
Like, or, but then it all, for me, it comes back to that moment where he got mad at her for using the calling him by his name tactic.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, okay, well, you're smarter than you're acting, you know?
Yep. Yep. Yeah, that part was weird.
It was weird.
Which is why, like, that part leans into him just enjoying, like, the chase. Kind of like, was this a game that he wanted to play with her? Like, he didn't actually care about her in all the ways that he said.
Yeah.
Really interesting.
Yeah. Was he planning to, like, just kill her at the end of the night no matter what?
Right.
I honestly don't know. Or was he hoping he would walk away with her that night?
Yeah.
I cannot tell. And him killing Mr. Harper, you could say, you know, it's because he touched her and he is in his mind, he's twisting it to be the good guy killing the bad guy here.
Yep.
But when it comes to him killing Carl, why
right.
did you do that? I mean, obviously because you didn't want anyone here to be able to help her get away from you.
Yep.
But is that it? I don't know. And that's pretty sinister. Like killing, I mean, killing Mr. Harper is sinister, but I can see in his mind how he can warp it in a way that makes him the good guy. Whereas, like, you killing Carl, I feel like you have to face yourself there and be like, I'm just killing people just to keep her. Like, that's evil. Like, that, how can you twist that in a good way? I don't know. But I don't know his mind. We never will. He's a weird one.
And he's dead. And he's dead. If I were her, would he be dead? I think, honestly, I think everything up until that last moment is pretty doable.
Okay, yeah.
Because, like, even, like, in the trunk of the car, I don't ask me why. I was thinking about this yesterday. If I were trapped in the trunk of a car, I would kick out the headlights because, like, that's a whole thing, like, that you can do. You can kick the headlights out of the trunk. So, yeah, pro tip for anyone who gets stuffed in a trunk, just kick out the headlights. Then you can put your hand through there. Yeah, but I think, like, that part would be doable. And I think the other tough thing is, like, I want to be like, well, I would have not dropped the phone, or I would have said something to 911 a second earlier than she would have. But in the rent-a-car area. But it's just the movie set her up to fail. It's not her fault.
Yeah.
In all those moments.
The moments I can grasp at are, you know, I probably would do the fawn tactic where you go along with it. Would that have helped me, or would that have hurt me? I don't know.
Exactly.
I really don't think either of us would have dropped that phone. I mean, it's possible. Of course it's possible.
Sure.
But I feel like I wouldn't have dropped that phone. I would have held on and gotten through that call through.
Yep.
And then also, I think at the very beginning, when she's up in the lobby and she's calling that taxi and she's locked inside, I think I would like immediately call a family member and be like, fill them in on what's happening right then up there before going back down to no signal and going for the security guard's help. I think I would have been spooked enough to call a family member and let them know what was going on. And maybe that would have gotten me help, you know, that they would be swarming and my family would be sending someone to help.
Yeah. So I'll be honest, I don't know if I would have thought to do that, but I think
I'll call my family over nothing. I'll call them. I call them in the stupidest circumstances. So I know, I would have called like my mom.
Okay. Yeah. That would have definitely worked in your favor. I probably wouldn't have, but I don't know. I want to believe that most of what she did, I could have done.
Yeah.
I think once you get to the part where she had to like put her handcuffs around his throat and like that part, I don't know if I have the strength.
The file to the eye.
Yeah, the file to the eye, maybe. I don't know. We've talked about the stabbing. It's a lot scarier.
If you can do that, that at least weakens him when you're attempting to like use those cuffs.
That's true. That's true. Yeah, that part is probably my trickiest moment in this.
Yeah. Also, I don't know if I could do that game of chicken with the cars.
Ooh,
I don't
think I have
those guts.
I kind of saw that too, is like almost like her saying like she didn't care.
If she died,
If she died, because like you said with the water part, like at that point she was like, yeah, go ahead, kill me.
Yep.
And if he truly was obsessed with her, like he wasn't going to let that happen, but which we still don't really know what his motivation is.
Yeah,
but
it's interesting that he chickened out. He didn't want to crash. Mm-hmm. Was that for her or was that for him?
Right. That's so interesting.
Yeah.
But second act overall for me, I'm going to – honestly, I'm going to say 75 for the second act. What?
I gave myself an 11.
What?
Yeah.
Because you don't think you're making it out of here?
All of my strong suits are what would I would do in the first act, which is I'm at a 95. All of the points where I think I can get out of it happens in the first act.
Okay.
The second, I think I'm not very mentally strong and able to think in high pressure in the way that she is. Mm. And like being able to kill the dog, I think the dog might kill me.
Oh, that's right. The dog thing for you is – that's right.
The dog might kill me. I don't think I would think to get him trapped in the rent-a-car. I don't know if I would even think to get the keys. I don't know. I don't know. I couldn't win the game of chicken. I don't know how she stayed strong through the car crash. Like, I feel like that would have incapacitated me and I wouldn't be able to like be a badass after that. I don't know if I could fight him off one-on-one being cuffed in that way. I don't like, I really, I don't think I can do this.
I don't know. I think a big part of why I'm saying 75, honestly, is because I'm coming from a place where I don't think he wants to kill you.
That is that's the thing is we don't know that for sure. I'm assuming that he is for the sake of the survivability score, but it's valid to be more nuanced in whether he even wants to. But I just don't know.
No, it's very – this one is very tricky for that reason. I don't know, because it seems like he's playing games.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I'm also annoying. I'm also so annoying with these. Like, you know, when you watch the movie, you have like the most fleshed out understanding visually and everything. And I'm like, no, there's got to be a way to get out of that freaking garage. There has to be an exit somewhere. There's got to be. There's got to be an emergency. About,
right. Like, there has to be an emergency exit
somewhere. Cause like,
because isn't that the point of having, like, the fact that he's working as a security attendant? He made a comment to the officers about like, oh, I got to close the gate. Like, there's a lot of homeless people living around here and they don't want them to come inside the parking garage. Mm. Like, if you were worried about that, don't you think there would be like a way to get in? And that's why someone's working security.
Yeah.
I don't
know. Right. That's what I would think. I don't know.
Yeah.
She is really so badass, interesting, though. So
she is. She did so great. So.
I like her. I definitely liked her. I'll. You know, this is actually really interesting because I think I'm gonna stick with what I went with, and I think this is probably the farthest we've ever been apart in an episode.
Yeah,
and I think it comes less from our capabilities and more from the way that we're choosing to profile the man. Like, we have different profiles.
I guess
I think is really cool.
I know both of us are that's so interesting. It is, because both of us are saying we are 50-50 on whether he would kill us or not. Mm-hmm. But when it comes down to our scores, I decided to veer toward the chance that he is, and you decided to veer toward he won't.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
It's really interesting.
What is your weight? Do you have a weighted?
I just did a regular average for this one.
Okay.
And I went with it. It's 87.
Okay, so my final weighted score came out to 39, and I actually decided to bump it to 29.
Wow, all right.
I've got about a third of a chance here that I'm mostly hanging on to because of the first act and like not going back down to the parking garage and hopefully getting help in that lobby. Wow. Wait, what does that mean for us? What is it? 58%.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
58. That's really cool. This is the first time I think this has ever happened.
Where this we've is been really that, cool. You know why it's different. Cool too? Is because it's like at the end of the day, we both say it's a 50-50 shot of whether he wants to kill us or not. And now like the survivability chance is at like a 58. That feels perfect.
And I think this will be really cool for community scores too, because I think the scores are going to be all over the board for this one.
Oh, I know I'm going to see hundreds on this one. I know.
Dude, everyone who puts 100, stop it. Stop it. You are not 100% surviving any of these movies.
No, absolutely not. All right. Yeah. Hope you guys enjoyed our first wintry, Christmassy episode. You guys can check us out on Instagram at I'd Survive Podcast. We have a bunch of links over there, including one to our Discord where you can submit your own scores. Please, please, please. And let us know, would you survive?